I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us from preschool to teen.
This is the show where we help you feel better about the mom you are and share our own parenting tips and personal stories.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Mom Hour. I'm Sarah Powers, and I'm here without Megan Francis today because you are listening to one of our Mom Hour Voices episodes. So if you're a longtime listener, you know that about once a month we bring on an expert, an author, a writer, a blogger, a mom you should know, and we chat with them about a topic that we think is best served by having an expert on the show. And today you are going to love my conversation with my friend Catherine Perlman. Catherine is a family coach, and she's the author of a brand new book called Ignore It, which is all about how we can selectively ignore some of those frustrating behaviors that our kids exhibit. And by not even engaging with those behaviors, Catherine has some strategies for how to make them actually go away and how you as a mom can just enjoy parenting a little bit more. So it's a fantastic conversation. Her book is great. I can't wait for you guys to hear this chat. But first up, we have a sponsor today, and that is Kind. Kind snacks and Kind bars. I know you've seen them in your local grocery store and coffee shop and gym. They make delicious, healthy snacks using whole ingredients you can recognize and pronounce. In my house, they are a mommy snack only. I don't even let the kids have them because they're sort of my little pick-me-up throughout the day. So if you are ready to try some tasty and healthy snacks, we've got a special deal for you with Kind. You can try 10 Kind bars for free, and all you have to do is pay shipping. So when you order the sample box, you'll also get to try Kind's Snack Club, where you'll receive monthly snacks at a discount and get members-only bonuses. So you shouldn't have to choose between health and taste when it comes to snacking, and that's why both award-winning chefs and nutritionists love and recommend Kind bars. I've tried their sample box. I'm partial, as you guys know, to anything with salted caramel, anything with dark chocolate, and there are several flavors I'm loving right now. So all you have to do to pick up your free sample box is go to kindsnacks.com/mom. That's kindsnacks.com/MOM for full details on how you can grab that sampler pack and get going with your Kind Snack Club. So thanks to Kind for sponsoring this episode, and let's move ahead with my conversation with Catherine Perlman. Hey, everyone. I'm here with Catherine Perlman, author of the new book, Ignore It. Hey, Catherine.
Hi.
So Catherine's actually here in my little makeshift studio with me in person, which is really fun. We live a few minutes away from each other. And a little later, maybe we'll tell the backstory on how we met. But I want to get right into your book, which the full title is Ignore It, How Selectively Looking the Other Way Can Decrease Behavioral Problems and Increase Parenting Satisfaction. So could you just kind of set this up for us and tell us a little bit about your background and the concept behind the book?
Sure. So I'm a social worker and a family coach, and I've been helping people with parenting problems for probably about 20 years. And mostly I would go into homes and I would see families at their worst moments. So I would say, what's your most challenging time? And they would say, you know, between 4 and 6 when I'm trying to get dinner ready and whatever. And I would watch the dynamics and I would see over and over and over again, parents giving attention to their kids' annoying behaviors, to their testing behaviors, attention seeking behaviors, all of these things. And the thing is, whenever you give attention to something or you reward something with any kind of benefit, it's more likely to happen.
I'm already going to pause you. So let's talk about giving attention to something. What would that look like if there's a behavior like whining? What would giving attention look like that? Of course, we all think we're not rewarding that behavior. Mm-hmm. We're not encouraging it, but we really are, right?
Right. So even if we're getting cranky at our kids, even if we're yelling, even if we're punishing, that's still providing a benefit. And sometimes just getting a rise out of us for many kids is enough of a motivator. But also whining on the line at Starbucks, can I have a cake pop? No. Can I have a cake pop? No. Can I? You said no 3 times. Please, why? This one time. And for that one moment, you're like, you know what? Maybe they can have a cake pop. And you say yes. Well, now you just rewarded all of that whining and you're ensuring that that whining will continue to happen. Now, maybe the next 20 times that whining will get a no. But that'll get a no with attention. Right. And then the 21st time, they'll get the yes. And right. It's so motivating to keep going right. with it. Also, whining helps us take something away. So we put carrots on the plate. The kid whines, why do I have to have the carrots? Do I have to have all 5? I don't really want all those carrots. And then we're like, oh, fine, just eat one.
Right.
So that whining worked.
Right. It worked because there was a compromise because of the negative behavior.
Exactly.
I feel like I cut you off. So you were in social work and seeing these tough times in families and seeing parents sort of giving attention to these negative behaviors.
Yeah. And I mean, no matter what the parent calls me in for, there was one piece of advice I was always giving, which would be ignore it. Like, what should I do if my kid gets up at a timeout? Ignore it. What should I do if he curses at me? Ignore it. What should I do? All these things. It was just ignore it. Say no, and then ignore the behavior afterwards. And so I started realizing that this one teeny piece of advice can change a dynamic so drastically.
Right.
Stepping away from that power struggle and the dynamic and not rewarding that behavior, it's so ineffective. Kids stop using it.
Yeah.
Like, why throw a giant tantrum if nobody cares?
Right. Well, and in the book, of course, you go into detail into why this works. But I also want, for anybody listening who is reacting like, wait, what? Just ignore it. I think we should explain that there's a really, ignoring is really kind of a process of active disengagement. You are choosing as a parent to not engage with behavior. You're not really just putting earmuffs on and pretending this isn't happening.
You can't put your feet up, eat bonbons, and read your magazine.
No, because it's actually a strategy. And there's a bunch that we'll get into that is part of it that actually then reinforces good behavior and re-engages when the negative behavior is stopped. So we'll get into all that in a little bit of deep detail, but I want to just jump in for people who just think, okay, I ignore it and then it goes away. So there's really sort of like a process.
Right. I mean, first I want to say I did not make this up. I am reinventing a classic technique or theory in psychology, which is called extinction. And it basically is, if we stop rewarding or providing a benefit for behavior, it will go away. It will become extinct. Mm-hmm. So I tried to find a way to reinvent this for the everyday parent and make it practical. And like you say, you cannot just ignore your kid because we're parents, like they're going to get into some kind of trouble, but we're selectively ignoring, which means you're actually listening. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as the behavior stops, we re-engage, mm-hmm. even if we're really annoyed with our kid, even mm-hmm. if we're, you know, we're up to here with them, we still have to re-engage so that we can move on. And then the behavior can just disappear.
Right. Right. That makes sense. So what kinds of behaviors work really well with ignore it? We talked about whining. What are some of the other, if you could name three or four of like the ones that just, first of all, are so frustrating to parents, and mm-hmm. second of all, work beautifully with this approach.
Right. So what's so great about ignore it is that it actually makes parents feel better, because when you can ignore some of these really annoying behaviors, you actually feel better, even if the behavior doesn't go away. And then the bonus is the behavior goes away. So whining is huge. To any kind of tantrum, complaining, negotiating. Yeah. Pushing your buttons, actively trying to provoke you. And that's really for, it could be young kids, but also a lot in the teen years.
Okay.
When teens or even toddlers are upset that they can't have their way, mm-hmm. they can't, you know, stay out later, they can't have an extra show, they can't have a dessert, they want you to be as mad as they are. So they really test you. They say mean things, they push your buttons. So all of that stuff should be ignored.
Okay. And then in the book, you go over a few behaviors that really shouldn't be ignored. Do you want to touch on those real quick?
Yeah. So it's funny, actually, my kids the other day, they read parts of the book. They've heard me talk about the book so much. And something happened with my daughter, and my husband said, just ignore it. And my daughter says, no, Dad, you don't ignore real pain. And I was like, oh, that was so awesome. So you ignore drama queen and king. You ignore when kids are acting out and really putting on the crocodile tears, but you never ignore real feelings and real pain. So you always try and address that. You never ignore someone whose goal of their behavior is to be ignored, right? Mm. So a teen who is so obnoxious so that you send them to the room and you never see them again, that's what they want. So we don't ignore that. We don't ignore anything illegal, like, you know, or disturbing to other people. I've seen in the supermarket, kids, you know, taking things off the shelves and parents ignoring that. And they're not following my book. They're just like in their own zone. And like, we don't ignore that. If they're siblings and one is hurting the other one, we don't ignore that. So those are the main things.
Yeah,
that
those make sense. And when I read these parts in the book, it really did feel like common sense. The things that really spoke to me that ignoring it works so well are the things that are mostly I am feeling an emotional reaction, either annoyance, frustration, power struggle, where everybody's physically safe, like you said, no one's dying or in pain, property destruction is at a minimum, and it's mostly these kind of irritating or frustrating relationship dynamics that get stuck in a pattern. And I think when you're a mom, it's easy to say, you know, I'm a loving mom, we've got a good relationship, and overall things are happy and my kids are developmentally normal and all this, but you still find yourselves in these patterns where you get stuck that just are not enjoyable. And I think you bring up in the book the enjoyment. Once you're able to free yourself from having to respond to the whining and the negotiating, it is more enjoyable for you as a parent. So I love that.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you're a human being. I'm a human being. Like, I try and parent the best way I can, but I have feelings and my kids push my buttons and they hurt my feelings. And someone's yelling at me, I react, right? Like I'm on the subway, someone's yelling at me, I'm going to turn around, I'm going to react. So the key is to change that instinct because that instinct isn't serving us well.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, we can't help it.
Right. Well, I want to give an example from my real life. And then I think it'd be fun to go into your kind of the four steps of the ignoring it process. But I read this book, obviously, and it definitely made me think about the way I'm responding to my kids. And just one example that came up for us is saying please and thank you and asking for things respectfully, which if you would have asked me, I would have said my kids are pretty good. They're not like demanding or disrespectful. But I found most of the time, especially it's summer right now, so everybody's home. Mom, can I have a glass of water? Mom, you know, can I have a piece of toast? And I found that what I was doing is saying, yes, could you please ask a different way? Or maybe they started out even less polite. Or sometimes I'm delayed in helping them get what they need. And then it's, Mom, I asked you for peanut butter on my toast. You know, then it gets like that. I found that what I was saying with my words was, please start that over and ask in a different way. And then I will get you what you need. But what I was doing with my body physically in the kitchen was doing the thing that they'd asked me to do. So body language wise, I was already granting their request when they did not ask respectfully. And so those are just the little subtle ways where I'm thinking, I'm not even responding, Zero. I mean, I'm not physically making the peanut butter toast and I'm not saying anything with my words. And then eventually, you know, eventually it really does work. They don't get the response that they need. And eventually they figure out why.
I also think that they read us like a book. Like a lot of times we don't have to say anything. They know that something got to us.
Right.
They know that that pissed us off. They know that we, our face, we're making a huffing noise. We're tapping our foot. Like we're dropping things heavily. You know, they know, oh yeah, that I totally got to
her. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so true. So I think, the book just really helps you examine your response patterns to your kids as a mom. And even if you think your kid's behavior isn't out of control, I think it can really be a good self-test of what behaviors am I allowing and reinforcing by responding to them.
Right. So one of the things I try to do early on in the book is to help people not fix anything, not change anything, just kind of observe themselves.
Yes.
Because I think that we don't realize how we're parenting. And that was why it was so helpful for me to come into other people's houses. Mm-hmm. And so I can see the dynamic super clearly, but they can't because they're in it. And sometimes I have to step outside of myself in my own home to say, like, what is going on here? So I think taking that time to observe your own parenting, like, what are the times of the day that are a struggle? What are the behaviors that you tend to really, you know, push your buttons? Because what upsets you doesn't necessarily upset me.
Right.
Like, please and thank you for me. It's something that's important. I think my kids are generally polite, but, you know, I'm worried about tone and things like that. It's not as important. Or table manners in my house might not be that important. It might be very important in your house. Other things like whining might really upset me, whereas whining you might not even hear.
Right.
So I think it's important for parents to assess, like, what is it that's really pushing their buttons?
Yeah.
What are the dynamics? What are the times of day? Which are the children?
Yeah.
To which parent? Which caregiver? And to take a moment to think about what those things are, because then you're better able to identify those and not react later on.
And you don't lump it into one big problem, like my kids are driving me crazy, but you're actually able to sort of, like you said, isolate where the real problem areas are. Okay, so you have a little, I don't know, do you call it a mnemonic device? A little cheat sheet in your book for the process of ignore it. So this will get a little deeper into the approach. Do you want to set this up for us?
Yeah, so I wanted to have a process where it's not like you said, it's not just like we're ignoring our kids. This is actually something that we're actively doing.
Yes.
So I knew I needed to have a process and I wanted to have a way of remembering that process. Because when you read a book, you're like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. And then you're like, what am I supposed to do next? So I came up with this idea called I Like Relax Reading. And the first letter, actually the first two, except for I, relate to what you're supposed to do in each step. So, and the other idea about I Like Relax Reading is that relax is clearly mentioned.
Yeah. And you put yourself in that place.
Yes. You need to go to a happy place in your mind. Think about reading, relaxing, and stepping away from that feeling or whatever's going on for you. So the four steps are, the first step is ignore. So obviously you've already recognized that there, you've said no, the whining is happening, the tantruming, the complaining, whatever it is, you're ignoring, but you're really listening. You're not actually ignoring. So listening is a second step. And as soon as that tantrum has died down, as soon as the whining has stopped, I mean, as soon as it's done, then you re-engage. That's the third step. And re-engagement is moving on. It's not rehashing what was just happening. It's literally bringing up a new subject, serving dinner, talking about our day.
In a positive way. Reconnecting, kind of.
Reconnecting. And even if you don't feel it, fake it. Because if you don't, you will restart whatever you just stopped.
And let me stop you there, because you said not rehashing. And that's so hard because we've been so frustrated. And we want to say to them, do you know why I was ignoring you? I was ignoring you because it drives me crazy. But of course, that is giving them that initial attention that we're trying to.
They're like, oh, that upset you? That's great. Yeah. Good to know. I'll put that on my list for next time I want to irritate you. Yeah.
So it's ignore, listen, re-engage.
Okay. Uh-huh. And then the fourth step is not for everyone, but if the child has done something where they need to apologize, they've said something over the top to somebody, they've hurt somebody physically, they've thrown toys around the room, then they need to apologize for those things, or they need to clean up or do whatever it is. And also, sometimes a parent was not their best self prior to the ignoring. And if you've done something where you should have not said something, then you apologize for that. Because I think modeling apologizing for your kids is very important. We think as parents, why should we apologize to our kids? We're the grown-ups, but we need to model that behavior.
So that R is repair. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. So ignore, listen, re-engage, repair. And I love that, because then you're not, if things happened, if you know what went down during all of this, then you're not ignoring that. You're not ignoring the repercussions of someone getting hurt, someone throwing a toy, hurtful words being said. I like that.
If you pulled off all the books from your bookshelf and you made a huge mess, I'm not cleaning that up. Right. That's part of the repair. Yeah. Right. We're moving on, but
right.
Now go clean up your books.
Okay. So I like relaxed reading, standing for ignore, listen, re-engage, repair. And I mentioned one area where I have been using this lately, and that is just the way we ask for things and just not responding until I'm asked in a way that's respectful. That's a really little one. I noticed, so yesterday I was out with my three kids. We went to the Original Pancake House restaurant for like a fun late breakfast, and we were waiting outside, and the kids were playing with crayons, and the two younger ones had dropped a crayon that was just out of reach, and so they asked their older sister to grab it for them, and she ignored them. She did it. She totally like did ignore, and I at first I thought she didn't hear them, but she was totally doing it on purpose. So that's how, and I haven't like talked about this, but I have been practicing it for a few weeks, and she picked up on it, and they were like, didn't you hear us? And finally she said, I'm just waiting to be asked politely.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
So yeah.
It's funny because I've talked about it with my kids even before this book, and I mentioned in the book my sister and I in our relationship, but my sister used to use like big SAT words on me to make me scream and yell, and I was horrified, and that she was like, great, that works, that really upsets my sister, I'm gonna keep doing it,
right?
And so whenever my son comes and he says, you know, Casey always does this to me, why does she always call me that name, and I'm like, well, because it's effective,
right?
Stop reacting and she will have no fun and she'll stop doing it. So my kids are doing it same. I mean, I think it's the same principle.
And I would think that you don't want to skip those other steps, especially when you're doing this with your own kids, because there's other lessons in here about repairing when feelings have gotten hurt, or, you know, re-engaging and moving on. In the book, you talk a lot about the need to kind of let it go and move on, and without anger and without resentment toward your kid, because that is also in its own way a positive reward for that behavior stopping.
Right. So the interesting thing is we're spending so much time on disciplining and dealing with all these unpleasant behaviors that we actually are forgetting to give our attention and to give our benefit and reward to the good behaviors. Mm-hmm. So actually those behaviors become extinct. So we're actually doing a double disservice. We're increasing the things we don't want to see, mm-hmm. and we're decreasing the things we actually do want to see. And so once parents make that shift, they're like, I'm not going to reward you for this, but I'm going to pay extra attention mm-hmm. to when you're listening mm-hmm. and when you respond after the first, you know, ask and mm-hmm. when you say please and thank you. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to just take that for granted. Right. I need to give you that right. reward, whether it's a just, hey, great job right. on saying thank you, or a high five, or even for kids that are really resistant, a point for their reward chart or right. whatever. But I think we have to jumpstart their motivation to act nicely.
Right. It's so easy as moms to get focused on that negativity and that nagging. And like you said, we're not even seeing the positive behaviors. We're not even seeing the improvements in areas where they've grown. We're just stuck. And that's why I think, going back to what I said at the beginning, it's so freeing to, number one, not have to respond and engage with all these little things that bug us throughout the day, but also then get to focus on the positive.
We're going to take a quick break and chat about one of our sponsors, and then we'll get back with some more questions for Catherine. So I don't know about you guys, but shopping for greeting cards has kind of lost its luster for me. I put it off till the last minute when somebody has a new baby or having a birthday and I've got to go pick up a card. I'm just not that inspired by what I'm seeing in the stores these days. They're relatively expensive for what I'm getting, and I find that I put it off and sometimes just don't even buy a card. So we're really excited to talk to you guys today about Love Pop. Love Pop isn't just a greeting card, it's an experience in an envelope, and I'm not even exaggerating. Love Pop is reimagining greeting cards and how you buy them. They have more than 250 designs to choose from, and they definitely have the perfect one for that special person in your life. So whether it's a wedding or a birthday, if you're saying thanks or celebrating, they've got you covered. Here's something I love. If you would rather shop in your PJs from home, you can order a Love Pop card online, and they will handwrite a message in your card and mail it directly, so you can send a personalized card from your phone in about 1 minute. I mean, if that's not genius, I don't know what is. So since you can't see what I'm holding right now, I have to tell you about these cards. They are laser cut paper cards with that. Basically, it's like magic when you open them. I got one for my son Reed, who loves dragons. And when you open it up, it's the most intricate, beautiful dragon that you've ever seen. And his face seriously just about lit up. So they've got amazing lines of designs, again, over 250 on their website to choose from. And it's so fun to think of whose face you could light up by choosing one of these super unique cards. So if you would like to enter their 2018 Love Pop birthday sweepstakes for a chance to win 50 3D birthday cards, visit lovepop.com/themomhour. Again, that's lovepop.com/themomhour, all lowercase, and check out their amazing designs and go ahead and enter that birthday sweepstakes. You'll be glad you did. So thanks to Love Pop. Okay, guys, so let's get back into my conversation with Catherine Perlman.
One thing I want to do is talk a little bit about our listeners who have very young kids. Mm-hmm. And on the cover of the book, it says, nip bad behavior in the bud, ages 2 to 18. So you really believe, and it makes sense to me, that this can work for all ages. But let's talk about those, I'm going to say 18 months to 4, that toddler and young preschooler mm-hmm. age, where, like you said, big emotions are real. Tantrums are normal developmentally. And yet there are still some ways to apply ignore it to keep the tantrums and that kind of stuff in check. But that's that I feel like could be hard to tell, especially if we are a first time mom. How much of this is my kid manipulating me, getting what he wants? And how much is a very healthy release of big feelings, because life is hard when you're
right.
two.
It's frustrating.
Have you found ways, like if you went into a home of somebody with a 1 and a 3-year-old who is struggling, not just with tantrums, but maybe it's other dynamics. Are there things to look for or ways to help parents understand that difference?
I think when you ignore tantruming, it will, depending on the kid, it will either go away altogether, or the tantrums will become shorter or more infrequent. So it is age appropriate for mm-hmm. a 2 to 4-year-old to have a tantrum, because their feelings are big, as you say, and there's no place to put it. There's no control in their life. They want to be independent. It's also frustrating.
And often it's bubbling up from other things that are hard about being 2.5, you know, whether it's a new sibling or a new school.
Or being hungry.
Yeah.
You're hungry, you're tired, you cry. Like,
right.
you don't have the ability to deal with all these
right.
things. Or to say, I'm hungry. You don't even know what that is. You
right.
just are falling apart. So I do talk in the book a little bit about being preventative and thinking ahead about
mm-hmm.
your kids'
yes.
needs. So that is, don't, you know, go off schedule, you know, make sure that they do eat and sleep
right.
and all those things do help those things, but you're still going to have tantrums. So I think for anyone whose kid is having a tantrum, again, if they're crying because they got hurt or because that, you know, something bad happened to them, then you don't ignore that. But if they are literally on the floor kicking and screaming because you said no, well, you know, that is the kind of tantrum we should ignore.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I like that. How, I'm just curious, your kids are how old?
I have a 10-year-old and a almost 14-year-old.
Okay. Have you seen, as you've sort of, I mean, this book is coming out now, but you've been using this approach for several years. Have you seen your own parenting kind of evolve and change as you've helped other parents with this concept?
Oh, for sure. Because like I said, it's so easy to see someone else's problem. Yeah. But sometimes someone else's problem reminds me, hey, I'm actually doing that exact same thing. I can't believe I'm doing that thing I'm telling this parent not to do. And so I can shift and readjust. Yeah. And that's one thing I always say. It's never too late to make a change, which is great. Even if you have a 17-year-old, you can still change that dynamic. Yeah. You can change the way you act and that changes everything.
Yeah.
My kids, sometimes I'll get caught in the power struggle and then all of a sudden I'm like, what am I doing? I already said no. And then I'll literally turn my back and they're like, you're ignoring me. I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
And I'm just going to do something else. And then as soon as I see they have stopped whining or complaining or begging for whatever it is that they want, then I say, okay, what are we doing this afternoon or whatever it is.
Now let's talk about saying no for a second. Because one thing I noticed is that I had a knee-jerk no response that was coming out when it didn't always have to.
Totally, the
and
same.
Once you say, I know you and I talked about this one time, like we both tend toward wanting to control. And so the problem with that of having an easy no, like I don't have, some people have a problem saying no to their kids. I do not.
Right. It's mine comes out first. Yeah,
Yes. And the problem with that is once you've said no, you've got to back it up. And I do have one child in particular who will ask why. And at this point, I'm okay with answering why once, simply. And then after that, it's no more. But man, applying this process and just being a little bit more like self-examining myself, I realized there's a lot of times where I didn't need to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that could also help parents, because if we're going to ignore the whining and the negotiating and the tantruming, we got to be prepared to go through that process. And if the answer might have been, huh, let me think about that maybe, or sure, why not, go ahead, then the kid is happy. We have said yes. And if the yes is okay, give the yes. Does that make sense? Have you found that for yourself?
Yeah,
and
totally.
I'm sure there's some parents who are on the other side who say yes and then feel resentful or their kid is out of control. But for me, I find myself, and I think part of it is, we've talked about like where I am in motherhood, like I'm reaching this stage where life is easier, my kids are more independent, but I went, you know, I had three kids in 5 years, so I was in like control mode for a long time.
Survival.
So I don't know if you have anything else to add on that, but
I mean, I feel the exact same way. My first reaction is a no. Can I watch one more show? Can I have a cookie? Can I? No. And my husband's the opposite, which is makes us good together. And I feel like, why do I always say no? A lot of times it could be yes. The thing is, because I know I tend towards no, I have to be really careful. Once I say no, it's no.
Yes,
even if I made a mistake, even if I shouldn't have said that, I'm like, why? They could have.
Right.
Like, there's no reason. Because if they whine and complain, then I say yes, then I've now reinforced that behavior.
Or what I realized when I was doing the thing, you used the example of the carrots at the beginning. I say no, they say why, they negotiate, and then I meet them in the middle.
Right.
But that's not, if you start out saying, like if I started out saying, you know, I'm not sure, let's figure out a way that this works for both of us, then a compromise I feel like is okay. But if I start out by saying no, and then we meet in the middle, that no seems to carry less weight the next time. Does that make sense? Like, I don't think compromising is, for me, it doesn't feel like that's a bad thing if we start out saying, let's meet in the middle. But if I start out saying no, then I've lost no matter where I meet them.
Well, I might say that you lose anyway. You lose no matter what. And I don't think in general in life there's anything wrong with compromise. I think it's really healthy. The problem is with parents and kids is once we start compromising, they want to compromise for everything.
Sure.
So no matter what we put on the plate, they're going to start negotiating.
Right.
And sometimes we just want you just eat what's on there, you know, or don't.
Right.
You know, but I don't want to always have to negotiate. And so the more you negotiate. Yeah. And so parents, I had a parent call me and he was so proud of himself. He said his son really wanted this one TV show and he said no because it's 30 minutes no, and then he's like, and I made a compromise and I let him watch two YouTube videos and I'm like, you lost basically. The kid doesn't care whether it was the YouTube videos or it was he got what he wanted. And so I think that now he also knows, well, next time you say no, I'm just going to push and whine. And the thing is, because we're tired, you have three kids, I have two kids, I work, it's sometimes I give in after saying no because I'm tired. So I just try and tell parents, if you're tired or you're in no mood, give yourself a break.
Say yes the first
time,
right?
Say yes the first time. Say no to carrots. Who cares?
Right.
Let them watch the TV show. Order in pizza.
Right.
You know, you can't be on and perfect all the time. So give yourself a break. But if you say no, you have to follow through.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And I think that's true. You know, my kids are 4, 7, and 9. And it applies to them in different ways. You know, the littlest is still going to tantrum or whine or whatever. The oldest is going to negotiate. But I can see how it works at all the ages. So,
yeah.
Okay, well, let's shift gears a little bit. I'm curious about how this process was for you writing a book, because you've been going into homes, working with families for almost 20 years. You teach in a university.
Yep.
You've done TV appearances. You've done all this stuff, but this is your first written book. And I think you've told me that you don't think of yourself as a writer, first and foremost, right?
No, so, I think of myself as a social worker who writes.
Right.
Yeah.
So what was that process like for you?
Well, first I want to say I live with a writer.
Okay.
So he's a professional author. He has 7 books. So I feel like I have a little bit of a leg up because I've seen the process. Even though he didn't help me pitch the book, write the book, or any of it, I know how it works.
Sure.
So that actually gave me, I think, a big advantage. But in some ways, it was super easy because it's something I've done. It's not like I needed to do a lot of research.
That's true.
I literally was saying in my book what I have said to hundreds of parents. So in that sense, it was easy. But sitting down every single day to write between 1,000 and 4,000 words is brain numbing every single day. And to me, I thought this book could have been, I don't know, maybe 40,000 words. And the publisher was like, we need 60. So I'm like, okay, great. So let me just keep going with it. So everything was longer. And I write a weekly column that's 600 words.
Okay.
It's super tight and short.
Yeah.
And in some ways, that's hard.
Yes,
too.
I think 600 is hard.
And so, but in a way, this was like freeing. I was like, wait, I can tell examples and I can explain stuff. But just the day-to-day, you know, getting it done, because I had a very tight deadline. I decided I wanted to do this in 6 months. It had to be done by September 1 last year. And that was it. So I had to stay really focused, and it was exhausting. It was hard.
So you're glad that part's over?
I'm ready so to do glad, but I am so proud of myself. Like, I cannot believe I did this. Like, it seems like it was such an accomplishment. Yeah. You know, I'm not one to feel like super proud of myself for doing a lot of things. I am so proud of myself. I look at the book myself. It's by my night table. I'm like, I can't believe I wrote that.
That's so awesome. Well, now I want to kind of tell the backstory for listeners on how you and I met, because it's kind of cool. And our listeners know, you know, Megan and my backstory. But so Megan and I have gone the last few years to the Mom 2.0 conference, which is a moms and social media, blogging, all of that conference. And two years ago, right?
Uh-huh.
Or three?
Two.
Yes, two. Mm-hmm. It was here in Southern California, where Catherine and I both live. And Catherine took the initiative to post a message saying, if there's anyone who's at the conference but is also local, lives around here, let's meet up. And so we tried to find each other at breakfast. And I mean, honestly, our conversation was maybe a minute.
Yeah.
Like 60
seconds. 2 seconds, yeah.
We weren't even sitting down.
No.
But we found out we had both moved to this area within a month of each other. Like, same exact timing.
Yeah.
And that we lived, you know, Orange County can be very sprawling. You can live in Orange County and live 45 minutes from someone. But we found that we lived literally 10 minutes away and, like, traveled in the same, you know people in my neighborhood and, like, we had mutual friends. So, and then over that next year, I think we only had lunch, like, once.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like kind of thing
together.
You say as a conference, like, let's meet up, we live in the same town, blah blah blah. I think we had lunch once, and then we both went to Mom 2.0 this past year. But it's been really fun to see you write your book and have our two platforms kind of overlap a little bit in this way. And then, you know, we went to the last Mom 2.0 conference and actually spent time together there. So it's been very fun. I don't know a lot of people in my industry that are also local in my town.
Uh-huh.
I can put them on one hand. So it's been very fun.
Well, and also, I mean, it's so nerve-wracking going to a conference.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, I went blind. I knew nothing about the conference.
Yeah.
I don't consider myself a blogger. It was totally terrifying. So that was, like, my way of comforting myself. But, like, let me try and meet some people. And we did meet a bunch of people, but I could tell right away, like, you're just my kind of people. So I'm glad that we've, you know, been able to.
We've been on a 5-mile hike together. Yeah. That's, like, longer than I ever hike. Catherine
I gotta get you out
to
again.
To the top of the mountain. So it's been really fun for me, because I think you had just gotten your book deal. You were about to sit down to start writing when I first met you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've been able to follow that and am holding a copy in my hot little hand. So that's been really fun. What's the latest, or what's the next for your private practice and some of the work that you're doing now that the book is out? Do you continue to take clients in family coaching?
I only really take very few clients because I do have a full-time job as a professor. Mm-hmm. I do write my column every week, and I'm hoping to do speaking engagements for the mm-hmm. book. And I'm starting to realize that I can't help one person at a time, but I can speak to a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. So either in small groups like Mom's Night Out or mm-hmm. PTA meetings and things like that, like I can give the exact same message mm-hmm. because honestly, now what I've seen is our problems are universal.
Yeah.
Like whatever you're struggling with, I guarantee I've seen it many times and yeah. everyone else in the room has some version of yeah. that same struggle.
Yeah.
And so it's just so much more effective for me to do like on larger platforms. So I'm hoping to get more into that.
Yeah.
As the book, you know, progresses.
Well, I really want to encourage our listeners to buy the book. We didn't, just due to time and our conversation, we didn't get into everything, but there's some really great ideas about implementing positive behavior strategies like reward charts or goal charts for
consequences.
Kids. Consequences. And then also preventing negative behavior and a lot. I mean, we touched on some of those things, but I really encourage people to pick up a copy of the book. It's a quick read because you've just laid it all out in a very easy step-by-step way. And I recommend it.
So thanks.
Congrats on it being out. Let's read the title again for everybody. So it's Ignore It, How Selectively Looking the Other Way Can Decrease Behavioral Problems and Increase Parenting Satisfaction. You are Catherine Perlman. Tell everybody where to find you online if they wanted to head to your website. We will, of course, link to the book and to your website in our show notes, which are at themomhour.com. Look for this interview with Catherine Perlman. But tell everybody where to find you, where you hang out most online.
So you can find me at thefamilycoach.com and on Twitter and Facebook, I'm The Family Coach.
Okay, that's easy enough. And this was episode 16 in our Mom Hour Voices series, which is what we call it when we do fun interviews like this. And that will be at themomhour.com. So you can find Catherine's book anywhere where you buy books, right?
Yep.
Amazon's probably easiest. We will have that link in our show notes. So head on over, grab that. And thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome.